Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a podcast and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from thousands of successful individuals from around the world. I'm your host, Ashutosh Garg, and today I'm delighted to welcome a very accomplished marketing guru from Sydney, Australia, Mr. Darren Woolley. Darren, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Ash. Pleasure to be here.
Thank you. Darren is the founder and global CEO of Trinity P3 Marketing Management Consultancy, and he's an editor-at-large at Media Week Australia. So Darren, before we start talking marketing, tell me a little bit about your own journey in brief.
Well, Ash, I actually was one of those kids at school that my English teacher said, whatever you do, don't go into a profession where you have to put words down on paper to communicate. Okay. So I found myself following a science stream at secondary school and ended up doing a degree in applied science, working in medical research. Mm-hmm. My boss at the time was saying to me, you should do a PhD. And I just couldn't find a topic that I wanted to become a mile deep in, but only an inch wide as far as the topic went. And an opportunity came up to go into advertising. So midlife crisis at 26, I became a copywriter in an agency, a creative director, and then 23 years ago, saw an opportunity in the marketplace to start my own consultancy, which I've been doing for the last two decades.
Amazing. And as they say, the rest is history.
As they say.
Wonderful. And Darren, how has your background in science influenced your approach to marketing strategy?
It's a really good question, Ash, because a lot of people always, when they hear my story, say science is so different from marketing. And in actual fact, it's not that different. There's a huge amount of creativity in both science and marketing that is driven by human curiosity. And I think anyone that is curious about the human condition will find a great career in marketing, because that's really what it's about, is trying as much as you can to understand people, which are a fascinating topic. And I think it's the curiosity, but also the desire to test and learn, is what has driven most of my strategies going forward in marketing, because it's about observing, making a hypothesis, putting it to the test, and then learning from the results, good, bad, or indifferent.
Very interesting. So let's now move to Trinity P3. Tell me the philosophy behind Trinity P3, and what is behind this unique name, and how does it differ from other consulting firms?
Well, look, I'm glad you picked up on the name, because it was actually originally P3, and that stood for helping people achieve their commercial purpose through the creative process. So that was the three Ps. But when we started, we thought our marketplace was marketers and their agencies, but it quickly evolved that there was a third party increasingly involved, and that was finance through the role of procurement. So we had this unholy trinity of procurement, marketers, and agencies. So we changed the name from P3 to Trinity P3. And really the purpose, and we state this with every client that we work with, our sole purpose is to improve the outputs and performance of their marketing.
Fascinating. And, you know, based on all the work that you do with so many different organizations, what in your view are some of the common mistakes a lot of companies make when it comes to marketing and marketing strategy?
Well, I think the first mistake that a lot of people make is thinking of marketing as only being the promotions part. You know, the famous four Ps. Yeah. Promotions is just one of four. And some people say there's seven Ps, and I think I've seen at last count 15 Ps, but let's stick with the four. While promotions is often the most visible, and it is often the one where much of the money goes, it's not necessarily the one where there's the biggest driver of growth. You know, the others, distribution or placement, product development, pricing, these are all important considerations in any growth agenda and growth strategy. So that's the first one. The second is the fact that marketing is not often directly linked strategically to the business objectives. Because in certainly publicly listed companies, the business objective is often to grow shareholder value.
Right.
And yet the marketing role is to actually grow revenue and margin as a way of improving profitability. You know, and so finding the way to connect marketing strategy and objectives to business strategy and objectives is really essential. The third one is this idea that if one more person says that famous quote, 50% of my advertising budget's wasted, I don't know which half, and that's Lord Levy Hume or John Wanamaker, depending where you did business, I would say to them, in this day and age, you're a fool. Because absolutely, we now have the data and technology to, if not answer that question definitively, to at least give you a very significant insight to what is working and what isn't.
What a great response. And since you spoke of data, that's an interesting segue to my next question. How do you utilize both qualitative and quantitative analytics to improve marketing?
So most of our focus, Ash, is around the performance of marketers with their external suppliers. And by that, I mean their advertising agencies, media and creative and digital and PR and all the rest. We, from day one, have been measuring productivity and performance as the dual measure of performance. Productivity, because there is a huge potential waste of funds and resources if you are non-productive, and performance is against achieving objectives. We do that by collecting huge amounts of data with all of our clients and using that to then create hypotheses, which we then test on a client-by-client basis, to the point that we have quite a robust model for actually being able to project resource utilization and performance.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. My next question is about technology. Mm-hmm. How do you think technology is reshaping the way advertisers interact with audiences?
Well, we've seen the impact from 15, almost 20 years ago. The first is the number of channels that advertisers need to consider when they're thinking about interacting with their customers or client, consumers. And what I mean by that is there was a time when, you know, the Mad Men TV show was, it was television, outdoor and magazines, maybe some radio. But today there are literally thousands of different ways of interacting and touching and engaging with your customers. The thing is that I think a lot of marketers have fallen into the trap of thinking they have to be in all of those, and their resources do not allow them to do all of it. And yet data is now allowing people to get a much better idea of which of those channels are actually the most productive. And I think that's really going to be the future for us, is going to be using things like AI on huge data sets to actually be able to predict where performance will come from and focus that investment so that there's a much better return on either marketing or media investment.
Very interesting. And, you know, you just spoke about Mad Men, and I've often used this example in my conversations. When I started life in 1979, that was 4.5 decades ago, advertising was big billboards, full-page newspaper ads, or maybe if you were rich enough, a film, a little clip that it was there in theater. Now the entire paradigm has changed completely. And as you very rightly said, there are hundreds of opportunities available. How does a brand manager, along with their agency, select which media to be on?
Well, look, it's interesting because there is a huge amount of data available for all of those. But I, as I alluded to or stated earlier, I think the first thing that marketers need to get back to is testing and learning, you know, and doing a series of contained short-term tests on individual channels to just look at what is the engagement level. You know, and that's really what this is about. The first thing is that we have to get attention. We then have to engage the viewer or in that message, and then see how that changes behavior. Now, there's data available for all of those. If we started measuring that, because one of the things I've noticed is as the pace and volume of work has increased due to technology, the time taken to stop, review and reflect on what's working and what isn't has virtually disappeared because people are moving on to the next project without actually getting the lessons of the current project.
Right. You know, right. Very interesting. The other question I wanted to ask you was that in a market which is so culturally diverse as Australia, what are the marketing challenges agencies like yours face to address multiple cultures?
Yeah, and look, it's one of the things that I love working globally is that the Europeans think they have a very diverse set of cultures in Europe. But I'd have to say Southeast Asia would be the most diverse region in the entire world. And I think that anyone that can actually solve that issue in Southeast Asia of how to market, you know, I think Thailand, someone said to me, there's over 20 different dialects or languages in Thailand. So, you know, when you're talking about complexity, the thing is globally or regionally, one thing to do is to try and get to what is the core of being a human being and get people to respond on the things that make us, that we share our human commonality, or to go the other direction and really target individual cultures with messaging that is specifically customized into those cultures. But there is no mid ground. There is no tokenism in between. It's either one or the other.
But when you look at, say, a global brand, which is going across multiple cultures, where something positive in one culture may not necessarily be positive in another, how do you as an agency, or how does an agency or a brand manager address these big cultural challenges?
Yeah, I think the big issue there is we've seen particularly the big consumer packaged goods companies take one ad and make it into five different executions.
Correct.
With stereotypical visible casting, you know, so someone that looks Pan-Asian, someone that looks Northern European, someone that, you know, and so on and so forth. I think increasingly that's seen as tokenism. You know, while representation is important, and I think cultural casting is important to represent the audience, I don't think tokenism is appreciated. And so I think that the best global advertising and the agencies that do it really well are the ones that really try to find that human insight rather than a cultural insight.
Fascinating. Thank you. My next question is on sustainability and the young consumer, you know, the millennial, the Gen Z, and now Alpha, Gen Alpha. They're very conscious about sustainability as compared to boomers like me when we started our careers. How do you approach this whole concept of sustainability in your marketing campaigns? And why has it become so important in today's world?
Well, look, our role is actually helping our clients find the agencies that are sustainable. And that's where a client has the objective of their own organization being sustainable and scope three, which is their supply chain, being sustainable. Now, it's an interesting conundrum when you look at marketing, because the whole purpose of marketing is really to drive consumption. And driving consumption could be argued is the antithesis of sustainability. It certainly drives economic sustainability,
right?
But not environmental sustainability. But let's be honest, I think most consumers are wanting to do business with organizations who are making an effort to reduce their environmental impact. Any human activity will have some negative impact on the planet. right?
Right.
But where you an organization and their supply chain is making real tangible steps to minimize that as much as possible, I think people are attracted to that. I think rushing out and saying we're zero net emissions and we're carbon neutral and those terms still raises a huge amount of skepticism. And I think the average consumer is not falling for it. They would rather you say we're working towards it, we've got an objective of being there by 2040, you know, and these are the tangible things we're doing, rather than making these ridiculous greenwashing claims as a way of getting short-term gains.
Fascinating.
Sorry, long answer.
No, but great response.
It is a complex issue.
Absolutely, but great response. Thank you. My next question is that I'm going to ask you to look into your crystal ball and say, what emerging trends should marketers be aware of in the next 5 to 10 years?
It's interesting when we start talking about trends, because first of all, I don't think anyone has the crystal ball, but because if they did, they'd be retired by now. They would have made their fortune and given, and retired to an island somewhere. But certainly the most exciting trend that's happening is artificial intelligence. And I know everyone's talking about it. And a lot of people are talking about generative AI, which is generating content. And that's exciting, but it's not, to me, that's not the main game. The main game is going to be predictive AI, being able to finally get a much more informed view from the huge data sets that we have available. What is working and what isn't? What's the trend? Where are consumers moving to? Even not just in response to advertising, but product innovation, you know, and being able to use AI in a way that enhances human creativity and innovation rather than just generating more content. Because I think, I don't know about you, but I think the world's awash with content, some good, some bad, but you know, if we could use AI to actually generate more of what people want and stop wasting our resources generating things on what they don't want, I think that has to be a positive for human beings.
Well said. And, you know, AI is something which really has taken the world by storm. The jury is still out on how we as human beings can use it. But that is a whole new learning curve I think all of us are going through. But Darren, I have two more questions for you. My next question is that given all the work that you've done, can you share an interesting case study where Trinity P3 delivered exceptional value for a client? And I don't want any names, of course.
So it's interesting because when we work with procurement, they think exceptional value is cost reduction.
Okay, yes.
Right? And yet we often, acting with the marketers, say, well, the other measure of value is increased performance or reinvesting the savings from one area to another. Possibly the most interesting project I've done in the last 3 years. So, you know, at the back end of the world pandemic, but was working with a group of procurement people in pharmaceuticals. And their role had been largely to control the marketing buying and with a view to reducing the cost. And we're engaged to help them identify how many other areas they could actually engage marketing to improve the value proposition. Now, it was really interesting because once we got their mindset out of cost reduction into performance enhancement, we opened up this whole area where procurement can start to play a role hand in hand. In some ways, think of it as, you know, I know the metaphor or the model's been debunked, but the left brain, right brain, you know, allow the marketers to be much more focused on innovation and ideas, and the procurement team not be there to just cut costs, but actually build financial models and performance models and do the analysis. In doing that, we actually completely transformed the relationship between the marketing team and the procurement team. And so I'd say, can I put dollar values on it? Not in the short term, but I think in the long term, it's going to build a much more accountable and high-performing marketing approach by actually integrating procurement in there as a commercial partner and not just a cost controller.
Amazing. Thank you. Great response. And my last question to you, Darren, and this is for the thousands of people who will listen to our conversation. A lot of them are very young people. And since you're a marketing person, 74% of our viewers and listeners are under 34. What would you say are three lessons a lot of young viewers and listeners who are startup entrepreneurs should take back from our conversation?
Okay. And look, these are lessons that I've learned because I was a late start. I was a late starter. I started my business when I was 39, you know, and the thing that I've learned is, first of all, you know, ask lots of people for their opinion, particularly those people that you admire or value, and consider the advice they give you, but always make your own decisions. You always have to have your own decision built into whatever you do.
Okay.
The second thing is, don't expect instant solutions. Nothing ever happens. You know, I love that. I think it was Jack Nicklaus. You know, they said, you're so lucky. He said, it's funny. The more I practice, the luckier I get. And I think that applies to everything in life.
Yeah.
If you keep turning up every day and get on the course or on the court and keep playing the game, then things are going to happen for you.
Yeah.
The people that sit there and say, well, I'm waiting for things to happen are the ones that invariably get disappointed. And the third one is that a lot of businesses talk about how their people are their most important asset. I think that's the wrong thing. I've always said that the people I work with are adults, and I should treat them like adults. You know, that you get the best performance from your team when you treat them as equals and treat them with the respect they deserve.
Yeah,
because though people will always rise beyond your expectations when you do that. But when you try and control them or treat them as if they're children, they'll just live up to that expectation.
Well said.
And I've always found that you know, the teams, the people I work with, have always never let me down. In fact, sometimes surprised me with their innovation, their thinking, and their ideas.
Well said. And on that note, Darren, and your three amazing lessons, ask lots of people their opinions, but make your own decision. Second, you said, well, there are no instant solutions. There are no get-rich-quick schemes. These are my own words. Keep going, keep practicing. And the third one you said, which is so important, treat people like equals, give them the respect, and they will perform. Thank you, Darren, for speaking to me about your journey. Thank you for talking to me about Trinity P3 Marketing Management Consultancy and so many different aspects of marketing and communication and advertising. Thank you again and good luck.
Thank you, Ash. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.